Welcome to the Live Your Edge podcast. This is Gilbert Joy, your host. Join me as I interview world-class performers, seven and eight-figure entrepreneurs, digital nomads, and those living on their edge. Basically, living on your edge means you're constantly pushing your comfort zone, always striving for new heights. And that's exactly what we do at the Live Your Edge podcast. This week, we'll be speaking with Todd Uderstate, who is the founder and host of the Founder to CEO podcast. And Todd helps entrepreneurs and business owners level up their leadership and scale up their startup. If you have ever struggled with building your team, creating amazing culture, managing your investors, and growing your leadership abilities, then Todd is the person to go to. So please put your hands together and join me in welcoming Todd Uderstate. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Live Your Edge podcast. I'm Gilbert Joy, your host. Today, we have Todd Uderstate with us on the show. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Hey, Gilbert. Thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
So Todd is the founder of the podcast of From Founder to CEO. And today, incidentally, we're actually talking about, you know, what it takes to be a successful founder. So Todd, tell us, like, start us off on your journey. How was it like being a founder, and what can we expect for those that haven't yet taken up on that journey?
Yeah, well, it is a journey, isn't it, Gilbert? I mean, and everyone's journey is a little bit different, but I think there are some common things. When I started on my journey, I had a one-year-old son, and my wife is a physician, and so I said to her one day, I said, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, starting this company. And she said, what? And so a friend of mine from the Army, Kyle, he and I were chit-chatting about it. And so I said to myself, you know what? I really have to treat my wife as if she was an investor, because I'm going to be taking resources from our family, time, money, and whatnot. And so I put together a 35-page pitch deck. I did, just as if I was going to go to Silicon Valley. And I took my wife out to dinner, to a very nice steak dinner. And I went through the slides, and she had a lot of questions, and she decided that, okay, yep, I'll be your first investor. And that's how it all started. And so I did all that while I was still working, of course, at my old job. And it was kind of weird, because you know how so many of us entrepreneurs, we're working at a company, and you know, we may not like the environment that we're in or what we're doing, but you really can't quit until you actually get your other gig going.
Yeah, so there's some difficulties in balancing the time you spent at your daytime job, and then the side hustle or the other project that you're working on is significant enough so that you can quit your daytime.
Exactly. So in my particular case, I was very fortunate that I was able to quit my job without having traction per se and being able to build it full time. But there was one caveat. I had to also take care of my one-year-old son at the same time. And so that was really hard to do.
I imagine it's really challenging, because you got to constantly think about the bills, and then you got to make sure that your cash flow is healthy for your business. I mean, how do you do that?
Well, I'm a former Army officer. And so one of the things I learned and kind of built in habits as an Army officer is time blocking and being very disciplined and being very focused. So I learned to maximize the time when my son was sleeping. And so I knew when his sleep patterns were. And so I said, okay, what can I realistically get done during these time periods? And I was extremely focused on that. In fact, so much so that one day I was sitting at my desk and I didn't start my business in my garage. I started it in the loft in my house, which was near my son's room. And he was one, and he was in his crib, and I was on the phone with a new potential client. So I was really excited. You know, I was very focused, and the client on the phone was kind of upset about something. And all of a sudden, around the corner of my son's room, I see this hand. Well, it didn't really register in my mind that what was going on, because I was so focused on this phone conversation. And then out around the corner pops my son's head, and he's all smiley and giggly. And then all of a sudden, it dawned on me, like, oh, wait a second, my son's out of his crib. Oh, wait a second, he's never done that before. Ooh, how am I supposed to talk to this guy and take care of this? And he came around the corner, and he was covered in feces.
Oh.
And he was all happy, Gilbert, because, you know, he just had a bowel movement. He was feeling good, and he got out of his crib. So he was all happy. So he walks closer and closer and closer to me. And he's, you know, getting feces on the wall and getting feces in the corner. It was gross. And all of a sudden, I was paralyzed because I'm on the phone with this guy. And I also didn't want to touch him because he's covered in feces. He comes up to me and gets very close to me. And he says to me, poo-poo, daddy, poo-poo. And the guy on the phone says to me, did you just call me poo-poo? And I said, no, that was my son. I'm also watching my son. He got very upset at me and hung up on me.
Oh.
Yeah. So, yes, it was very difficult to start the company and watch my son at the same time. But that was the, like, my wife being the investor, that was the terms, that was the term sheet. You know, I had to also figure out how to take care of my son at the same time.
How did that all change for you? When was the turning point?
So about a year into that, I had left my old company. And I had a 1-year non-compete. And so I didn't reach out to any of our old companies and clients and whatnot. And so all of a sudden, people started looking for me and they found me. And because we had put together a minimal website and, you know, it wasn't fancy. It wasn't a sales funnel or anything like that. And people just started calling me. And I got very lucky and that we got some old clients that came our way. And then that kind of kickstarted our success. And then we grew from there. And then, you know, I'm happy to talk about, we branched out into a lot of other areas. But yeah, that's what happened. I got very, very fortunate that a lot of our old clients had contacted me and it was able to kind of give us that cash infusion that we needed. Because I had taken out a loan from the bank too. And I was just on the verge of not being able to make the first payment on that loan repayment. And I was really scared.
And what would happen if that loan payment defaulted? Would it?
Well, it was my own personal credit. Well, they wouldn't take away my house, but I mean, they would start a cascading effect because it was obviously on my credit. And they would just start looking, you know, for assets that I have, I suppose. Actually, what happened was too, are you familiar with NASCAR?
Yeah.
Okay. So
the name, yeah.
Yeah. So NASCAR is, you know, the auto racing organization. And they had reached out to us to do some work for them. And I was all excited because, I mean, this was like a game changer type of situation where we would be able to pay off all of our debt and get a lot of traction. And it fell through. And I was like, oh my gosh. And so kind of, you know, this roller coaster we all are on when we're founders and entrepreneurs. And that was a really bad roller coaster time. But the thing, thankfully, you know, some other old clients came back on the scope. So yeah, that's what happened. We got fortunate that a year later, a lot of people were looking for me.
And they found you because you were on, you know, on LinkedIn and you had a regular website up and just reached out to you, or?
Yes. Cause it's so funny to bring up LinkedIn, because I know it's going to sound like I'm old, but I mean, I was on LinkedIn in 2004. I think LinkedIn started in 2003. And so I got like rode the wave of the early interest in building a platform on it. And so, yeah, I mean, LinkedIn has been a very powerful resource for me. And I like it. I'm most comfortable on there. People seem to have positive conversations. Yes, you know, daily I get like 10 or 15 pitches from, you know, marketing people say, hey, we want to do your marketing for you. But I don't mind that so much because it's just people trying to connect. All you have to do is say, no, thank you. But I just found it to be a great positive place to engage with people. Don't you?
Yeah, I find that LinkedIn is turning more. Before it was just like a job search. People are just posting that. And now it's more of an engagement platform where people are engaging with each other's content. And one of my goals actually this year is to spend more time on LinkedIn, pretty much go all in. Before I was more on the Instagram and the Facebook because I was running advertisements and whatnot to my sales funnel. But now I'm spending more time on LinkedIn because I feel like I can build more genuine relationships with people there. And I think that it's only just started to be, it's only just begun. Would you agree?
I totally agree with you. I mean, when Microsoft bought LinkedIn, I think they were able to resource it more to be able to do exactly what you said to do, because they make most of their money off of companies and recruiters using it for job stuff, as you mentioned. But I think that's slowly changing because they're focusing more and more of their resources to make it a very positive engagement platform. Today, it's not uncommon for me, for example, to get 3,000 to 5,000 views on something that I post, a posting. I mean, when was the last time you heard anybody getting organic views on something like that, other than nowadays on TikTok, which is very popular? But on Facebook and Instagram, you can't get those organic views anymore.
Yeah, you can't. That ship has sort of sailed. And unless they have a huge following or they're spending a lot of money on advertisement, it's very unlikely that Facebook will, or Instagram for that matter, will try to push your content out to viewers. And I think it's really the model how it all starts for these social media channels is when they're fresh or when they're starting to get an engagement with the audiences, they don't have a lot of content on the platform. So they don't have this elaborate monetization strategy. But when you start having a lot of traffic, they can start charging people for advertisements and people would pay for that. And then that's when they start to move away from giving organic reach.
Absolutely.
And I think that's how like TikTok is getting on the radars of a lot of business people, because I've played around with TikTok before. I also played around with the Chinese only version of it, which is called Douyin. And both of them, a lot of them is showing videos of people doing some silly stuff. And, I have some friends that ask me, like, why are people that are, entrepreneurs, why are they using TikTok? Wouldn't that screw up their image? And I don't really know how to answer that. I mean, I guess maybe it's become acceptable. What would you say about that? Like, are you familiar with this whole idea of using TikTok, even as a startup business owner?
Yeah, I am familiar with this topic, and I always find it interesting because people go to these platforms for different reasons, right? And there's way too many people in the world for everyone to remember that you're on LinkedIn with your professional profile and you're on TikTok doing a dance, right? I think people worry about that a little bit too much. And instead of worrying about, where do I really want to build authentic relationships, either personally or professionally? And if TikTok is the place where I want to build relationships with people and where I want to display a skill or whatnot, so be it. I don't think people are a lot more casual about this and a lot less informal. If you're the CEO or founder of a company and you're on TikTok doing some dances with your kids or whatnot, I don't think people are going to think less of you. Now, if you're on TikTok and you're doing something that is hurting someone else, or you're drunk and all over the place and slobbering, I mean that might have an impact, right?
Yeah.
No, I don't think people worry about that as much anymore. As long as your personal brand that you're trying to, and who you are authentic, which is really what your personal brand is consistent. People like to see different dimensions of you. It's like Instagram. I mean, people tend to be a little bit more personal on Instagram than they are on LinkedIn. But then same thing with Facebook. They just have different parts of their lives that they expose.
So would you say that there's a a separate distinction between the personal branding side of things and the professional branding side of things, where let's say LinkedIn would be more geared towards the professional side. And if you post something like dancing with your kids on LinkedIn, that would have a very different effect on your audience. If they saw that on LinkedIn versus if the same exact people saw that on TikTok, if they use both.
Yes, I think yes. But if you are going on LinkedIn and you're, let's just say you're doing dancing stuff, but you're a dancer and you're trying to sell your services as a dancer, or you have a platform with courses and you're trying to teach people to dance and whatnot, I mean, I don't think people would be bothered by that on LinkedIn. If they saw consistency between what you're doing in the video and what your professional background is and what you do for a living. But if you are, I don't know, a founder of a fast growth SaaS company, I was talking to one yesterday who monitors forests and is using its agritech. And I mean, he's talking with very big companies and private owners of forest land about monitoring their forests. And if he's all of a sudden putting TikTok videos on LinkedIn, TikTok-like videos on LinkedIn, the people he's trying to engage with for his SaaS platform would probably be, let me think about how I'm going to say this. They would probably kind of cant their head a little. Well, that's interesting. Well, why is he on there dancing? You know what I mean? It's like, they're like, well, what does that have to do with a SaaS platform for forests? You know, at the same time too, just he could be showing a different side of himself if it's tasteful, or maybe it's part of a wedding and he recently got married or went to his friend's wedding and he's talking about the importance of family. Well, I don't think the people who was engaging with him for the SaaS platform would think that would be bad. They would probably say, "Hey, that's great. You know, he's family values is important to him." You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think what tends to happen is people get they take themselves a bit too seriously, especially if they're working in an industry where it's, you know, you're supposedly professional and you know, not doing, you know, have like showing, funny videos. I guess that, yeah. And for myself, speaking for myself, I also like, I have kind of not, I am familiar with TikTok and I have friends that use it, but I don't use it myself because for this same reason, like I have this, maybe it's being uptight, or it's this feeling of, someone like, and if someone from my LinkedIn or client or something starts to look at my TikTok videos and then see me doing these crazy dances, it would be embarrassing, right?
Well, I'm with you. I'm the same way because I don't do any TikTok whatsoever. I don't even have an account on TikTok. But just it's not interesting to me, right? And so I'm more comfortable on LinkedIn, and I think LinkedIn is a place where people engage. This is kind of hard to say, but I would say the topics and the issues are probably a little bit more serious. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, I would say it's a bit more direct because on TikTok, you don't know who the people, you might not necessarily know who's actually viewing your content.
Yeah.
And whereas on LinkedIn, you can see at least, okay, have some context who this person is. I'm engaging with them.
Right.
Whereas the TikTok, I have no idea. And it might draw a very different crowd that's a lot more fragmented.
Yeah, you're probably right. Although, you know what's really interesting too? Because I do like LinkedIn. Yesterday, so I go on LinkedIn and I also use it to find people to come on my podcast. People who are doing interesting, disruptive things and who might share their from founder to CEO story. And I do a lot of research. So, I mean, I just don't indiscriminately start sending messages to people. I do research. I read all these magazines. So I sent out a message to someone. I won't tell you who they are.
Oh,
and,
sure.
And so I got back this message that I was like, what? They said something like, what you really mean is that you're spamming me and sending me unsolicited invitations just so I can listen to your podcast. I'm like, no, I was very specific. I reached out to you and let you know that I was interested in you and your business. And I would love to learn more. And if you want to listen to podcasts, that's great. But I mean, LinkedIn is a place where you professionally network with people. So he used the phrase unsolicited invitation. And I'm like, I thought invitations were unsolicited, right? I mean,
unsolicited.
That's what he said. I was like, wait a second. I was just inviting you to connect and telling you, that I'm kind of intrigued what you're doing. I'd love to learn more. I'm not selling you anything. I'm just letting you know my podcast is there, but I would love to talk about it and see if you might even have an interest in sharing your story more on my show. And I thought that was pretty benign. Don't you, Gilbert?
Yeah, it is. I think like LinkedIn, if you have a profile, you're expected that someone's going to reach out to you and contact you. And I mean, there's all sorts of, maybe got a different impression or it happens. I mean, I had cases where I used to work in sales for a SaaS company, and there was a individual I reached out to, which was a CEO of a big company, property developer. And I didn't know that I had his email on my list twice. So of course it's a carefully crafted email.
Yeah.
The thing is I ran a sort of mail merged with that. So how it works is I have the first sentence, it's always personalized.
Right.
So it's personalized to their company, it's personalized to them specifically. And I get that information through whether it's their LinkedIn. I see like what interest they have or what kind of work they've been doing, or even their social media channels like Facebook, Instagram,
right,
where I actually know like what kind of hobbies they have and stuff. So if I have similar things, I bring it up. So it's pretty personalized message. The second half of the message is scripted, but it's the first half, it's personalized. So there was no problem with that. The problem was I had both his professional and his personal email on the list. And I sent out three emails. The chain was three emails in the first 7 days. And it just so happens that the email sent out on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And it sent out twice because he had two email accounts. Therefore, there was a total of six emails sent out in a single week to the same person. So that was not a pleasant experience for him. And he had some personal thing he was going through. So he had he called me up.
He called you?
Yeah. So he called me. I had my personal number on the signature, and he called me up, and he was overseas. This was a long distance call. And I was like, he's calling me on my cell phone and he's making a long distance call. Like, it should be good, right? And then, but no, he's calling me because he's really pissed off that I had the audacity to go and do that, like to send him six emails in a single week.
Right? There's way too many other things to get upset about.
but I'm sure that there's a lot of people doing that to executives. But the thing was, he was particularly triggered because he had a sensitive time of his life, sure. Something personal. So he was pissed off. He was yelling at me for a good 10 minutes. And in my mind, I was just thinking, you know what? This sounds like it's not going well. This sounds like this is not going to work out. And we hung up the phone. And then a few weeks later, I got an email from him. He was apologizing. And he said, you know what, Gilbert, I'm sorry, because I was going through something very personal to me at the time, and I got agitated, because I didn't know who you were and why you were reaching out to me, and I didn't have the time to figure it out by reading through the messages, so I decided to call you, and then do this interrogation kind of thing, and he asked me if I wanted to have hot coffee.
Wow.
And had coffee with him, with my boss. We didn't end up signing a deal, but we became beer buddies afterwards. So I like to tell this story as an example of, you know, sometimes you try a lot of methods to get in front of someone. Some of them work well, some of them don't work as well. And even if you think it doesn't work as well, sometimes it actually doesn't turn out as bad as you think, and you can actually salvage the relationship. So in my case, it was, you know, we became beer buddies. So it's good, you know, happy ever, you know, happy ending, but not all the time.
Well, I mean, you often talk about on your show about getting to the edge of your comfort, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that's a great example, I think, of all of us as entrepreneurs. We're always kind of trying to push the envelope, but there are these comfort zones that we stay in. And if you hadn't reached out and just dealt with that situation, you would have gotten to the point in time where you've had a good relationship with him. And it's actually through the struggles that we all go through that we grow and that we become better, learn more, build relationships, and make life more fulfilling. So it's people say, well, I wish this could be easier. You know, I wish it wasn't such a roller coaster as an entrepreneur. I'm like, no, you want that. Yeah, eventually you want to have some success, right? But it's hard to sustain success without having some of those life-changing struggles that shape us that only we get to when we get to that edge of our.
So I'm curious, what was that? What are some of those stories that you have when it comes to reaching out to people for your podcast that were initially, they were difficult to reach out to, and in the end, you were able to work something out? You don't have to mention any names. You can maybe share like maybe some the story of how that went and what was your approach, and what can we learn about it? Whether as business owners, we're looking for clients, when it comes to prospecting, when it comes to reaching out to people, what is the pleasant way of doing it?
So
this
is going to sound crazy, Gilbert, but I have some of my best success in getting people on the show. Like I get pitched, people come on my show every day, which is, I feel blessed about that. And some of them are good fits for the show and some of them are not good fits for the show. But I actually write handwritten invitations and send them to people in the mail.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? And I have about a 60 to 65% yes rate when I take the time to do that. It's when I try and send people digital invitations, and if their profile is very high. I mean, I know you've had John Lee Dumas on your show and Neil Patel. I mean, those are big names. And so I just find that you have to go to the place that everyone's not really using. And so I had this, I got this nice stationery made up for From Founder to CEO podcast, and my special card, and I do a lot of research, and there's something else I also do. If they wrote a book, I read the entire book. If they wrote two books, I read all two books. If they wrote three books, I read all three books. Okay. And I go through those books with multicolored highlighters, and I pull out things that I think that are relevant for our audience. And I will ask that person in my handwritten invitation whether or not they would be comfortable expanding upon those thoughts that they wrote about. And it's a lot of work, but I just find that the quality of the conversations are higher, and therefore the value to our audience is higher. I'd like to think that that's why our podcast has become so popular and why we have so many listeners, and not because of my goofiness or my ability to be a good interviewer, because I don't think I'm the best interviewer. I just do a lot of research and preparation and getting people ready to come on so that they feel comfortable and they process their thoughts enough so that their insights and their information and kind of the wisdom that they want to share with other founders is processed and thoughtful, you know?
So just to sidestep a little bit, because we're talking about podcasting, and you don't use any sort of, I personally don't use it. I don't use any like scheduling services for podcasts. So some people use those as a way to find guests on the show. So I'm guessing you do all of this manually, where you personally reach out to them and invite them to the show. Is that correct?
I do. Yes.
Wow. And
I, yes, I do. And it's a lot of work, but I, you know, for me, it's I also, I'm learning a lot and building my capacity to better serve the founders that I work with. So I read a lot. And you can't see my office right now, but I have my own Amazon drone that brings me a book almost every day, because everyone's writing books and I want to know what they're saying. Some of them are better than others. And so, but I will tell you, you know, speaking about being living on the edge, I mean, there are people that I send cards to that I'm like, they're never going to say yes to me. I'm kind of embarrassed even sending this to them. They're probably going to see it and open it up and say, who the heck is this guy in Cincinnati, Ohio with this long German last name? Cincinnati, Ohio. Are you kidding me? What is Cincinnati, right? So I kind of cringe when I put the stamp on the envelope and toss it in the U.S. postal mail. And I say, okay, I'm going to try it. And occasionally, I kid you not, I get messages back from people and with, they'll send me an email or leave me a voicemail message and then say, nice try. I get some snarky ones. This, I won't say any names, but this one guy said to me, until your platform gets to 10 million downloads per episode, you can consider me a non-guest. I'm like, oh my God.
Wow.
I know. And so when you get those, I'm like, oh man, it kind of does take the wind out of my sails sometimes to be able to keep doing that. But I do. I say, okay, I got to get out of my comfort zone, because they're just people like me. And so that approach has worked. And I've been fortunate to have a lot of really wonderful people who have some great insights. The founder and CEO of the Container Store, Trader Joe's, Seth Godin was on the show a couple months back. And just a lot of really great people because I've taken that approach. So have you ever been to Cincinnati before?
I haven't.
So there are some like signature Cincinnati foods. Like we have this ice cream that is everyone loves called Graters. And so occasionally I will send some Graters ice cream with my invitations because they are kind of representative of Cincinnati. And it's really good ice cream. It's Oprah's favorite ice cream, by the way.
Wait, how do you send the ice cream?
Oh, you can just ship it in the mail.
Oh, it's, you have to put like, you have dry, to like insulate
ice.
It.
Dry ice. Oh. And, yeah, they go in these insulated little boxes with dry ice and whatnot. Yeah.
Oh,
so anyway, because it captures their attention, right? They're like, oh my gosh, who's sending me ice cream, right? So, but I do, like, there are a couple people who I have not reached out to who, like, I'm going to say a name because I know you know this name, who I'm like, oh man, do I really want to interview them? Because I would do a horrible job and they're kind of scary to interview. When I mean scary, because like for example, like you did Grant Cardone's sales training, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So like having Grant Cardone on the show, I mean, that would be a big deal, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, that would.
And I like Grant.
I'm looking to get him on the show.
Well, you let me know when you do that, then I'll.
My buddy, another guy I interviewed, actually did get him on the show.
Oh wow.
And he did tell me it was a long process.
Yes, I'm sure. I mean, there are the things I like about him. Obviously, he's a very hard worker and very savvy. And there are some other things where, like, I saw his interview that he did with, what's his name? He's a big sales training guru.
Jordan Belfort, right?
Yes. Yes. And I saw that interview. I said, oh, Grant, you were not at your best in that interview. Oh, my goodness.
Was he nervous then?
I don't know what his problem was. I don't know. He seemed very defensive and competitive in that interview. And so I don't know. I just didn't think he was at his best. But you know, you get in a conversation with some of these people, and let's just put it this way: Grant is probably not one of the most humble people in the world, right? You don't think of Grant Cardone and then say equals humility, right? That's not what you say.
No, no.
So I tend to shy away from the people who are kind of ego driven, to be honest with you. So they are at the edge of my comfort zone, you know.
But it's those people that actually like you said, you know, your edge of comfort.
Yes.
It's just out of your reach. And when you actually touch it, like when you actually reach your hand out of that circle and you touch it, you're actually allowing the rest of your you're extending, you're pretty much expanding your circle when you do that.
Yeah.
So
I agree with you. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, Grant would be great on the show. I mean, I hope he hears this. Maybe I should reach out to him and I'll say, you know, I'll send him this interview and I say, hey, we mentioned you on the show, you know, see what he says.
Cut the part out where I said he wasn't humble, okay?
I'll do that. I reached out to him a couple of years ago, actually. I got a response from him. And this was before he was like doing the 10X conference where he had like 30,000 people in the stadium.
I remember.
And I invited him to come to Hong Kong and do a keynote, do a workshop. So he told Jarrett, his VP of sales, Jarrett responded to me and he said, you know, Grant's going to, like he CC'd the email. So I saw that Grant responded. And Jarrett was like, okay, Grant's going to cost 120,000 US for one day. Was it one day or 1 hour?
1 hour.
Just to speak, you know, speak, you know, it was 120,000 for an hour. That's crazy.
Yeah,
that's like paying. So even if it's a day, that's pretty big. But given that Grant has never came at that point, he never did a tour to Asia. To my knowledge, he never did a tour to Asia. So it was a very relatively new market. And this is something I share with people, you know, some of my clients as well. When something we just mentioned before was the path in which we reach out to people. Sometimes they're a lot easier to reach out to when you reach out on a channel that they're not frequently using, or they're not that popular on yet. So if they are popular on Instagram, on Facebook, but they only have maybe 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 followers on LinkedIn, that could be a good place to reach out to them on. But also there's the, what I call, path of frequency in which they check it. So I don't know if Grant's going to be looking at LinkedIn, but I'm pretty sure he looks at Instagram because he likes to respond to his messages, or whoever, you know, is responding for him will see it. So, you know, these two methods.
That's a very good point, Gilbert. I'm glad you shared that. I'm taking notes myself.
Yeah, it's I actually wrote that in my upcoming book.
Oh.
I will share with you because the book is coming out by next month.
Well, let me know, and then I'll read it, and then you can come on my show and talk about it.
Yeah, sure. It's actually gonna be called The Underdog Manifesto. Pretty much how to reach for greatness even if you had a bad start.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah. So there's really two parts to the book. The first part is in your inner journey. Talk a bit about that, you know, which I don't see a lot of books covering both. I don't think I see any books covering both. Usually it's a business book where it just talks about techniques and tools and all that stuff. Or it's a spiritual, more spiritual book, and it talks about, you know, inner work. So my book talks about both of them, at least my version of it, and sidetracking here. But part of the book actually talks about this method I just talked about, which is reaching out through a channel where people are has less following on, which may need help. If they just started a YouTube channel, let's say, you know, they're really popular on social media, they're really popular on podcasts, but they just started a YouTube channel and they only got 1,000 followers. You know, to say, hey, let's do a YouTube video together, or something of that nature, and help them promote their channel.
It's a great idea.
And I think that would be, you know, that's an awesome way to reach out to people. And of course, you got the snail mail, right?
Of course.
Talks about the snail mail. There's a guy I know. It's called Stu. I'm not sure you heard of Stu.
Stu McLaren.
No, Stu, H-T-U, Stu Stick, Heineck, Stu Heineck. He was on the show before, and we also talked about what he does is he's a Wall Street Journal cartoonist.
Oh.
And what he does is he makes cartoons, and he sends them to people, like physical cardboard, like a canvas, huge, huge, huge block of paper. With the cartoon on it, and it's customized, it's tailor-made, it's personalized. It means that the person has done their homework and all of that. And when someone gets that in the mail, they get it in the office, right? And they have to find some place to put it. I mean, they see it, it's personalized, so they're not just going to toss it. They put it somewhere in the office, and they may not pay attention to it at the moment because they're busy, but once in a while, they'll go back to the office after lunch or after meeting or whatever, and they will see that, you know, they'll see that the cartoons lying somewhere in their office, and they'll say, you know what? Why don't I just give this guy a call? And that's how it all worked for him. And it's allowed him to get in front of like heads of state, presidents.
Wow. Like, that's amazing.
It's crazy. So his method is very similar to yours, where going old school actually is really good in a world where everyone is trying to go digital.
Yeah. It does take extra time, but if you're selective, I think, about who you're trying to reach out to your point, it has meaning because it takes time. Anything that takes more time is going to be people who pay a little bit more attention to, and it's personalized. I love that example. That's a great story. I am not a good artist, so I don't think I can do that. But
yeah, he has another story where he sends physical objects to people that represent his brand and his company.
Oh,
yeah. So like for instance, or something that matters to the recipient. So if the person likes baseball, they like baseball, they like a particular team, and maybe you would get a baseball for that, you know, that was hit by a certain person and is signed by them or whatnot. And you know, some of them might not cost a fortune, but it maybe cost like $30. I don't know. But if he's doing business, that is sort of like a lead acquisition, you know, cost.
Yep.
And if, yeah. And,
I think that's how I think that's how Gary Vee got all that stuff on his shelves in his office that you see in his videos, because people sent him all those little gifts like the Jets, New York Jets, and all that kind of jazz. Because you know, you even see on his shelves in his videos.
Yeah, he posts all of these, you know, these there's a lot of objects in his office, and I'm guessing they're all gifts.
They must be. Yeah,
they must be just gifts, and it's great marketing.
Yeah,
it's great marketing.
Yeah, it is.
What is your process for researching somebody? You mentioned a bit about researching and doing the real hard work.
Yeah.
What would be sort of your framework for understanding someone's work and figuring out what's the right approach to reach out to? Even the way you write your message, the way you write your letter, you know, in their sort of language.
Yeah. It's not complicated. I mean, I will use every search engine possible, whether it's Amazon, LinkedIn, Google, Apple Podcasts, listen to their interviews, watch their videos, read their books, sometimes even purchase whatever they're selling, and kind of get and understand their voice. But most importantly, usually people have one thing they're passionate about. And if their passion overlaps with our mission of our podcast, then usually it's a good fit. I find that there's this point in time where a founder gets a certain amount of success and they feel like they want to give back and help out other founders. There's this moment in time where they're feeling confident, things are going well, and they have traction and they're growing. And so that there's this moment in time where they feel like they are open more to sharing, and then be a little bit more vulnerable. And it's that those are the people who are really good guests for our show. And when I sense that about them, so I'll see how long they've been in business, I'll watch their interviews and videos and see how vulnerable they've been. And I usually will collect little bits and pieces of things that they say that reveal things about their leadership journey, since that's what our podcast is about. So for example, if they say, hey, I learned this about myself, about leadership, but they don't give it the story about it, I'll grab it and I'll say, well, you said this on this video on this time period. You said this in your book here. You said this. When I piece all this together, I'm assuming this was what was going on with you during this time period. And they're usually stunned that I've kind of pieced together kind of a psychological profile of their journey. And they say, yeah, that's exactly right. I said, well, would you mind sharing that story more on my show? So it's a lot of work. Now, at the same time, too, we've got a lot of people who come on our show because people are pitching to us using those services that you mentioned. And I have to go back and have them answer 8 questions that help them think through their stories to see if they're ready to come on the show. So I actually go back and forth with them a lot to help them refine that, because they haven't been thoughtful yet. They're just looking at trying to get on the show just to get, you know, exposure. And I don't mind helping people get exposure. A lot of the folks who come on our show have ended up in Time Magazine, Entrepreneur Magazine, Fast Company, other platforms, which is fine, which is great. I love helping being that kind of amplification for them. But the price of admission for our show, you got to tell a personal story.
Hmm. Yeah, got to be vulnerable. And I think that's a great point you brought up about the measure of vulnerability when it comes to identifying who would be a good fit for your show. Not just merely because they have achieved certain milestones in their life. And I think, I guess, like you mentioned, it would be a lot easier to identify who would be suitable for your show when you actually, you know, go through their materials and come up with specific questions and ideas. And I guess that was shocking, most if not all of them, that someone would actually spend hours looking through their materials and coming up with thoughtful questions to ask them.
Many people tell me that, yes.
And expose would not be a good word here. It would probably be to reveal something about themselves that they've never shared to anyone before.
That's right.
And maybe as a result of coming on the show or during the show, while being interviewed or while answering these questions or while sharing their story, they're able to come to a personal realization that they were not expecting.
Frequently, our guests tell me that after I stop recording the show. And that's actually the gift I want to give to them, is a greater insight on their journey from founder to CEO. And if I can help and do that for them, I like to try and do that as much as possible, because they're trying to help be helpful to me for our platform and also for many others. And so, yes, that's one of my unstated goals, is to really help them kind of put all that together. And frequently people tell me, like, wow, you know, this has been very therapeutic to have this conversation. And I said, well, I'm happy to hear that. You know, really, I am, because personally, I think about business, it's about people. And I, you know, whether you're selling a service or a product or whatever you're doing, I think that it's really about your journey and the journey of the people that you attract along the way. And isn't business there supposed to be to uplift and help each other in our lives to be more fulfilled, happier, successful? I mean, that's really what it's supposed to be about, right? We should be selling and doing things that help uplift other people. And so we're all on a journey, and our journeys are different, but there are common themes and common issues. And there's not an unlimited number of them. And so I like to try and uncover and kind of help them categorize and see, well, you know, here's how a couple other people handle this. It may not be exact fit for you, but at least you're aware that you're not the only one who's had that issue.
So it's sort of like a soundboard for them to have this. This dialogue helps them assist with their own journey while being able to add value to other people that might be going on a similar journey. So that's like a double, you know, a double contribution that you're providing them when they come on the show.
I hope so. Yeah. That's one of my hopes. Yeah.
That's probably an idea in my mind. I'm also taking notes. I think that's really, really useful.
Glad.
So for founders that are listening to this, and wherever on their journey that they're on right now, you know, a lot of the struggle tends to be, you know, cash flow, finding customers. And we did talk a bit about, you know, the prospecting aspect, finding people for a guest, for an interview, or it's finding customers. It still follows with putting them first and really seeking to build a long-term relationship with them. And do you have anything to sort of add on that point before we conclude this episode?
I think the more you become self-aware of who you are, the better you're able to build those long-term relationships with others. You have to know yourself very, very deeply. And so taking lots of assessments, getting feedback from other people about yourself and really understanding who you are and getting unambiguously clear about that is the path to building long-term relationships with others. And Aristotle said, know thyself, right? And I think, and it's easy to say that, but like, how do you do that? That's a whole other podcast episode. But
yeah,
I think getting to know who you are is essential for you to be able to build positive long-term relationships with others, either in business or inviting them on the podcast or whatnot. That's my piece of advice.
Definitely. To know yourself before you can really know others. So those that want to check out your podcast, to follow you, to work with you, Todd, where can they find you?
I would be delighted if they gave our podcast out a chance to listen to and see if it brings meaning and value to them. We're at FromFounderToCEO.com and on every single solitary platform you hear podcasts, Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, you name it. We're on all of them. And as I mentioned before, and you know, I'm most active on LinkedIn and happy to connect with people on LinkedIn. It's easy to find me. All you have to do is type in From Founder to CEO or Todd, UTER, and I'll pop up.
Awesome. I appreciate you coming on the show, Todd. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure too, Gilbert.
So with that, that's all. That's all for today, folks. So thanks for tuning in to the Live Your Edge podcast, and we will see you on the next episode.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. You can find more episodes every Tuesday. If you haven't done so, please subscribe for more updates as they come. Until next time.